Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. I'm not filling up to snuff today, but in life the show must go on. You know, I love this show today because I like the way it actually worked out. I was trying to get him on yesterday. There's some scheduling things, and everybody's busy in life. But now I'm able to get him on a one-on-one, and he truly is a tremendous veteran of the sport. He's proved time and time again he's fought the best of the best. With that being said, I want to welcome the one and only John Fitch. How's it going, my brother?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to have you on, man. That's one thing that I kind of went through with Liam McGarry a couple weeks back. You know, he's like, damn, dude, you've been there since the beginning. And 8 years ago was the beginning for him. You were just finding your stride 8 years ago. So it's kind of like I've got different aspects of the sport in my life for the last 23 years that it's wonderful to fall back on. You know, John, I look at your career, and it's been tremendous, you know. Then you jump over into Bellator 199, I was in-house. Tremendous fight against Paul Daly. You know, it was a fight that a lot of people assumed that you were going to get ran over on. You proved the crowd wrong. You proved the naysayers wrong. When is John Fitch going to step back into the octagon and show the sport what he's truly made of in the Bellator aspect?
Well, we're waiting for word on the date that I'm fighting Rory McDonald next for the welterweight title is in the first round of the welterweight tournament. And it's looking like February, I think.
I actually like that matchup for you, John. You know, you look at it.
Yeah, it's very good. I think it's a very good matchup. I don't think he's fought a wrestler of my caliber. I think it's a really good fight.
Yeah, I think so, too. You know, before we talk more, I kind of want to get your thoughts because it was one of your teammates from AKA, a tremendous warrior as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, I got Kung Lee's thoughts last night on it. You know, when you look at UFC 229, Conor and Habib, what were your takeaways after that moment? And I'll give you Kung Lee's insight. He said it was two warriors that were in battle. And what happened afterwards, it can't be controlled because the adrenaline level was way, way beyond where it would usually be because of all the torment, name-calling from the corners and everything that led up to the fight. So he said, you know, that was just a normal situation that occurred. What are the thoughts of John Fitch?
As far as the after-fight stuff, you know, you don't – this is a game to some of these guys. They think it's pro wrestling and they think it's funny, the stuff they do and the stuff they say. But for some people, some cultures, it's not a joke. You know, it's a fight. It's a real fight. There's a difference between what we have in most cities in the U.S. and what a lot of the places in the world have. You know, they have honor culture. And, you know, it's in an honor culture, it's better to go to jail for killing somebody than it is to go back to your village after being insulted and not doing something about it. You know, you have to go back and live amongst those people, you know, the rest of your life. So it's not the same as most U.S. cities. And there's cities in the U.S. that are like that too. You don't do those type of things in the south side of Chicago. You don't do that in East L.A. You don't do that in Campbell, New Jersey. You know, those places in Detroit. You just don't do that. You don't say those things. Someone will come and shoot your house up, you know, when you don't really have, you know, the same things that a lot of other places have. You know, you have your rep and your honor. And if somebody, you know, sullies it, you have to do something about it. Otherwise, everybody will have a bad opinion about you. And, you know, I think they've just been playing too many games with this pro wrestling crap. And it's just sooner or later something bad is going to happen. I mean, you don't even get these levels of antics and insults in boxing. I mean, boxing, you know, they insult each other, but they don't go after families. They don't go after, you know, culture, religion, that type of stuff. It's just, you know better. You know, it's not something you do in an honor culture. Like, there's going to be consequences.
You know, thank God. You know, somebody that actually agrees with me, you know. Well, Stitch does too. You know, I talk to him from time to time. But, you know, I look back at UFC 194 when Connor pretty much made his way into the sport. And, you know, me and him had some not so great words for each other, you know, because I stated that he was one of the most disrespectful fighters after the UFC 194 press conference. And he kind of called me some really nice words. But, you know, I look at the thought that you just put out there, you know, a lot of people got to understand a third world country, a different aspect, a different way of growing up. You know, people take this sport true to heart. You look at Russia, it's something very serious and detrimental to them. This is something they believe in.
Well, I mean,
China's the same
way. Even, you know, from in Dagestan, he's from a mountain village, you know. There's not that many people from where he's from. And, like, he, at the end of the day, at the end of the fight, he still goes back and has to live amongst those people. He still has to go back and be with his family and his friends and all those people. So, like, you can't really go back after letting somebody talk that way about, you know, your family and stuff like that. It's just not appropriate. I mean, sure, call the guy himself names. Make fun of him and his fighting style. Make fun of the way he looks, whatever. Like, you know, there's no comparison to what Ali used to do and what Conor was doing. Like, Conor was crossing lines for sure.
You know, I have to agree with Ali, you there.
Ali would call guys, you know, gorillas and ugly. And he would insult them, and he never said anything about their family. He never said anything about their religions.
No. You know, to me, that was a black mark on the sport. You know, I was a little pissed off that, and I know we're getting way off track here, but I was a little pissed off at Dana.
I think it was a kind of a wake-up call, honestly, because it's not a game. Like, these guys are... They're running pro wrestling organization. It's pro wrestling, but the fights are real. Everything else around it is 100% pro wrestling. It's not a sport. It's not structured like a sport. It's not merit based. It's just money and entertainment, and that's a problem. And these type of things are going to keep biting them in the ass because they're trying to treat a sport in a sport like fighting like pro wrestling. You can't do it. It's gonna turn people away.
You know, with that being said, you know, John, was that aspect of the sport, that transition of the sport back when it first started appearing in the sport, is that one of the reasons why you can say you attributed yourself to Bellator and left that the different promotions that you were under before proceeding to Bellator?
Well, going to Bellator had a lot to do with it's just a bigger platform, for one. You know, the competition level was better. You know, it had a lot of those things to do with it. I felt like I was going to be kept busier, have a chance at bigger fights. So, you know, that was a big part of why going to Bellator. I mean, the whole industry is held under the thumb of the UFC and the way that they do business, because – if you want to survive in this industry, you're going to have to either copy their business model or become more slimy and more corrupt than they are. Otherwise, you're going to go out of business. You can't play nice in these situations. So the only thing you can do is fundamentally change the structure of the sport and how the structure of the sport is run. And that's what the Muhammad Ali Act is supposed to do.
Yeah, you know... I was talking with Antonio McKee and Dan Severn and several other boxers about the Muhammad Ali Act. And, you know, I hate to say it, but, I mean, I shoot everything from the top promotions to C-level promotions. You know, I got to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
I don't think there's equality across the promotions. I just don't. I don't think they follow.
Oh, there's not. And the majority of promotions are content with being feeders to UFC. And most of them have deals with the UFC for bringing their guys up through the ranks. Like, nobody is competing with the UFC. No one's even trying to compete with the UFC. Everybody is okay with being the feeder to the UFC.
Yeah, see, this just creates one ugly machine. And you know as well as I know that the new owners
Monopoly.
Are actually the owners of the WWE or WWF, whatever the hell it is, and they actually physically in documentation have changed the name to Entertainment. So theoretically, if they wanted to, I mean, they can even, I mean, I hate to say it and put it this way, but theoretically they can even run a staged event and not get in trouble for it because they're entitled as Entertainment.
It's a little different because it's still masked as a sport. So like you still have athletic commissions are still involved. So it's still overseen as a sport. So technically you can't have fake fights. You can't do that. But you can leverage them. You can put a guy who doesn't rank in the top 50, promote him like he's a top 10 fighter and have him challenge for a title against another guy who maybe isn't in the top 20. Like because they're controlling the ranks and titles, they can do whatever they want. It's not really sport based. And they've said to themselves, their lawyers have said through the process of the Ali Act stuff and litigation for the class action lawsuit that their title is not a world title. It's just an award bestowed on the best fighter that night. So in the UFC's mind and their eyes, their titles aren't world titles. They're just ornaments. They're ornaments, trophies that are given after that one fight.
They truly are. You know, John, I was looking the other day, I was looking at your fight record, and, you know, because I like to look at a fighter's career and see. It's kind of like a trick for me after doing journalism for 15 years and being, you know, a photographer, you know, for a little bit longer. But I like to look at your career and see if I can find a defining moment, a moment that truly made you realize that you were on the right path and you were truly in the sport that you needed to be. And for me, I look back to your fight with Shoney Carter. You know,
I was just thinking that too. I think that's the one that kind of put me on the map and kind of took me off the map at the same time. Because I've been working on a book that covers some of my my journal stuff from over the years. And, you know, that fight was supposed to be, you know, after that happened, I was like, all right, here it is. Now my career is going to start. I'm going to start getting bigger fights. I'm going to start getting more recognition and all this stuff. But what actually happened was I scared off everybody. I scared off all the competition. Nobody would take fights with me, especially at 170. So, like, I got stuck, and I didn't fight for, like, 10 months. It took, like, I had, like, a great fight with Shoney, career-defining moment, and then I got shelved because no one would take fights with me.
Yeah, and, you know, it's crazy because it is a defining moment. Like you said, and then you got shelved, but then it still took you. I mean, it still took you all the way till 2005 to even get that major shot in a major promotion. What did that finally mean for John Fitch, you know, after you were shelved and after that supposed defining moment? You know, how does one pull themselves back up and step up into a major promotion like the UFC like you did?
You know, just keep grinding away, just keep fighting, you know, just making sure you remember why you're doing it, you know, and trying to get better every day.
You know, one thing that, and you'll get this, and a lot of my listeners won't, and a lot of other fighters that are listening won't, but you'll get this. And, you know, when I first got the opportunity to meet Javier Mendez, it's like this, I don't know, like a larger-than-life character. The best way I explain it to most people is like you look at James Krause, who's a young UFC fighter, but when you're around him, I mean, you could talk to him on the phone all day long and whatever, but when you're standing there next to him, it's kind of like your speeches, you're in awe of his knowledge. What type of intent or aspect did Javier Mendez, you know, persuade you? What type of intent did he instill in John Fitch?
Well, I mean, Javier was pretty hands off with me. You know, I had worked with a lot of other people with Hav, but Hav was a kind of a mentor with you know what fights to take, where to go, how fights should be. You know, I could talk strategy with him. but yeah, you know, I haven't worked that much with Hav, you know, as far as hitting mitts and stuff, but we've worked on a I don't know what you would call it, an intellectual level, talking about strategies, game plans, and that type of stuff. So that's a lot of the use I've gotten through Javier over the years, is just his overall understanding of the fight game and then and fights, you know.
Yeah. That's crazy. You know, I like to do little quirky things. As you know, you've been on the show before, and I'm not Ariel Helwani, and I'm not doing shows in a $5,000 suit from my grandmother's basement. I'm just a dude doing a show that the fighters love, and it's growing vastly. But, you know, I like to show a 360 of who the guests are on my show. You know, when you think about fighting, I mean, you cannot think about fighting without thinking about John Fitch. But when you think of the big screen, you really don't think that much about John Fitch. What was it like for you to make that cameo experience on Fight Life?
On, man, I don't even know if I got to see Fight Life.
You were in it, man.
Was it a documentary?
Yeah, it was a documentary with Jake Shields.
Man, okay, I kind of remember way back in the day. I don't think I even seen it.
Oh, well, you didn't even see you're sounding like Stitch now. You're in a documentary and you haven't even seen it.
Well, I've seen, we have cameras around so often, and I have not seen that documentary. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, bro,
it was
an award-winning mixed martial arts documentary.
I had a film student follow me around, like, you know, around my first or second fight or something like that in the UFC. Maybe it was a Berkman fight. But, like, she was doing a film project for her class, and I don't think I ever saw the final project.
Well, you need to, because it actually went on to be an award-winning documentary. And you know what's ironic about it? You were in it, you know, in it with Jake Shields, but then you go back and you fight Jake Shields in WSOF 34. The reason I bring that aspect up is because I want to prove to the people that are listening, the people that love the sport, that it's not always what you see on TV. It's not always what you see on social media. I mean, one day you're doing a documentary, you know, on fighting. The next minute you're facing a friend, a brother, in the octagon. What has that experience been like for John Fitch, and how do you overcome that type of aspect of the sport?
I mean, you just know that it's a sport. It's not a personal thing. It's not something you get emotional about. You know, you just have to be about getting done what you want to get done.
I like that. You know, because we look at the sport and John, I'm on my fifth, gosh, I'm sounding old. I'm on my fifth generation, going on my sixth generation of fighters. And, you know, a lot of them, I see them start out and they end up, their idols end up becoming their rivals. Has John Fitch ever been in that type of situation? And if so, how?
I never put anybody on that idol level that I was, you know, possibly competing against. You know, when I first started thinking about getting into the sport, it was because I wanted to compete against people. It wasn't because I was idolizing anybody. There are people that I like to watch, but I had never really put anybody on that high of a pedestal. You know, I like, you know, certain guys like Nogueira and Randy man, there's a lot of guys from back in the day that I can't remember anymore. Igor Vochanchin, I think, was one I used to love. you know, so there's guys I was really, really liked fights, watching fights, but, you know, I didn't idolize that many people. And you know, when I started coming up, most of the guys were bigger because, you know, there weren't weight classes early on. So, like, you know, they were mostly, like, heavyweight 205-pound kind of guys. You know, like Frank Shamrock was one of the smallest guys fighting those big guys back in the day. And then when they started introducing the weight classes, that's when I got introduced. And I wasn't somebody who sat around and watched a lot of other people. I watched tapes for technique and stuff, but, you know, I never really idolized anybody.
Well, you know, you truly have had your own style throughout your career. And there's one other fight that I kind of wanted to talk about, and then we'll get to the daily fight and what your thoughts and retrospects are on that. But, man, I look back and I watched it, and I was in amazement off the Holman fight when you fought Dennis Holman. You know, you look at your career, and there's so many defining moments, but, you know, we talk about the Shoney Carter being one, and then you were shelved. But then you come out against Dennis Holman, who had twice as many fights as you, and you get the win in that. What do those type of moments do for a fighter's thoughts and heart and mentality moving forward when you know that you're stepping into the octagon and you're beating people that the world knows and you're still climbing that ladder?
Man, you just have to take it day by day and fight by fight, mostly. You know, you can't get overwhelmed by looking too far into the future, and you can't get dragged down by focusing on stuff in the past. All you can do is handle the stuff right in front of you and, you know, take baby steps, really.
You really can. You know, I kind of got a deep question, and I'd like to get your thoughts. What is it? I mean, because I've had Dan Severn on. I've had several other fighters that, you know, don't know when to give up the sport, or they're tremendous and it's not even nowhere near their time to give up the sport. And then I've had, you know, champions that are in their 20s and 30s. What is it about the sport that enthralls you? I mean, what is it about that? The joy of getting hit in the face, the joy of hearing that cage door lock, the joy of fight night. What is it that keeps you consistent in the sport and has you coming back time and time again? You got true love for the sport. You're not going to go anywhere soon. What is it about it that keeps you there, though?
I don't know, man. I'm a little crazy, I guess.
Right.
There's just an obsession there, and I really don't know what else to do or what else I would do. I don't know what I could do that wouldn't just drive me crazy and make me miserable. And as hard as the sport is, and as rough as it is, and, you know, crazy as the ups and downs and stuff are, it's still way better than anything else I could do. You know, I've worked as a, I've worked baling hay. I've worked as a commercial insulator. You know, I've had some jobs. I've washed cars, and it's just 9-to-5 idea just seems horrible. Just working for somebody else, being told what to do, being stuck in an office. Like, I don't see a point to a lot of it. It's not fulfilling, I don't think, to me, to have to be stuck working for somebody else for hours and hours a day, building somebody else's dreams, regardless of how much money you're making. It's just not what I want to do. I'd rather build my own dreams and work for myself.
Right. Brother, I truly understand that. I mean, I'm sure the state of California is extremely pissed off at me. I was an engineer for the Hilton. I took the state engineering boards, and you got to pass in the top 4%, and I did. And of course, they paid for all of my schooling. I got my master's in engineering science, and I ended up a combat sports photographer. So, I mean, I'm sure they love me, man.
Yeah.
Thank God I didn't have no student loans, because I was in the union. They paid for everything. So it's like, you're right. There's just something about this sport that.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know,
that was a big advantage I had. out of college too. That you know, with some of the scholarship money and stuff I earned, I didn't have any student loans after school. And if I was in that situation where I had debt, there's a good chance I wouldn't have been able to fight at all. Yeah.
Didn't you go to Purdue?
Yeah, I went to Purdue University. Your teacher, or
yeah.
Degree in education.
And ended up a fighter. Well, you know, that's a cool thing though, because you can you're transitioning that aspect into your YouTube. You're transitioning different parts of your life into Fit Smash. What does Fit Smash truly mean to you? And kind of give a quick synopsis to the listeners.
Well, I mean, Fit Smash is my martial art. I've taken all the pieces and all the stuff that I've learned through martial arts and wrestling and whatever over the years, diet, nutrition, and I've compiled it and I've created my own system. I've created a simpler system that's built specifically for fighting, mixed martial arts, self-defense, and, you know, police, military combatives. I went through the Modern Army Combatives program in 2011, MACP program, and going through that program really changed my mindset about fighting and, you know, combat fighting, you know, for police, military, stuff like that. And I just really started focusing on that real fight ideology, you know, not so much entertainment, but like what's really going to work on the street, what's really going to work in a conflict where people might not actually know how to fight a little bit. So I think the Fit Smash system is really just the basic model that anybody can follow to be fairly competent in fighting.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to mess around with you. I have a contract with the Air Force, and I do their tactical takeaways and firearms and things of that nature. And I got to tell you, the first time I did it, you know, we crank our camera, our shutter speed up, we get everything set for fights, and, you know, I go and I shoot this, and I look at, like, my first 9 images, and I call the instructor over, and I said, bro, there's no way I can do this. He's like, what do you mean? I hired you. I said, man, I got my shutter speed cranked as high as it'll go, and I'm still getting blur. And you understand it, but my listeners, you got to understand how fast this is. I mean, close quarter combat is tremendous. To see these Navy SEALs, these Rangers, and everybody, you know, get a firearm pulled on them in a close quarters, it's crazy fast. I mean, I tell you what, it blew my mind that I couldn't even capture. I told them I'm going to have to video it. I said I'm not going to be able to capture images of it. You know, it blew my mind.
It goes fast.
Yeah.
It goes fast.
I mean,
you can't hesitate. You guys, they cannot hesitate at all.
No, it's like in 3.2 seconds they get a guy pulling a gun on him, and they got a gun on his belly with his arm shoved back behind his back.
It completely changed my perspective and opinion on, like, police and what they do on a given day. Like, seeing how fast things can go sour and really bad. Especially if you're in an area where there's a lot of, you know, violent crime and a lot of people have guns. Like, it doesn't take, you know, more than a split second for somebody to get killed. So I changed my opinion on a lot of what I see with the police and what they're doing.
Yours and mine both, man. You know, like I said, I was in Alice at Bellator 199. I thought it was a tremendous performance from you. You know, you look at that last outing. How do you feel that you're going to have to – do you feel that you're going to have to change a certain aspect? Because let's face it, Daly and McDonald are two different fighters. You know, do you feel that you're going to have to change that an aspect of the training camp to transition to Rory's style comparative to Paul Daly's?
I mean, there would definitely be, you know, some adjustments for sure because he definitely has way more grappling ability than Paul Daly. He doesn't have the power. He doesn't have the KO power, but he definitely has a lot of tools to deal with. So there's going to have to be a definite shift in, you know, strategy and sparring partners and that stuff.
Yeah. That's one thing I love about AKA when I was there at the new facility. I like how they do it. They got all the separate rooms, to the right of the hall, and you kind of start off in stages, and then you end up in the cage room. I like that. You know, that's probably the only gym I've ever been at that is truly like that. That's one thing I loved about AKA San Jose is the cage room. It's almost like a true fight going on because you got trainers in each corner or on each side of the opening to the to the cage, and it's almost like, you know, an actual fight is going on right in front of you. It was tremendous to have Javi on one side and the trainer on the other and watch, you know, everybody going at it. It was tremendous. You know, I think the last time I was there, I think Gray Maynard was there, Mike Swick was there, Kane. And to be able to see how that transitioned, it really caught my attention. You know, what is it about AKA that has you calling it home, has you, you know, you've been there forever. What is it about that place that, other than the brotherhood, because the brotherhood is deep there, that keeps you going back, John, that keeps you wanting to be a part of that family?
You know, we just have great team, great coaches, great atmosphere. It's a good place to train, you know. Like San Jose, it's super expensive, but, you know, it's a great place to live. And, you know, it's just found my home here, and I like it. And I couldn't really see myself going and training. I mean, I went to Vegas for a while to train. I liked it there, but it's just not the same type of guys, not the same number of guys. And you know, we have a definite fighter mentality at AKA.
Yeah. You know, life is crazy, man. We were talking about you. You're from Purdue. That's great, man. I love that you had that teaching background, and then you ended up like I did. You know, I'm still thinking about this fight with Rory. You know, I think it's a perfect fight for you. You know, this opportunity is a tremendous opportunity for you in Bellator. I actually prefer Bellator compared to the UFC. I'd like to see a 16-man tourney one of these days with the UFC versus Bellator, but I doubt it will ever happen because the UFC ain't going to let go of none of their money. But this fight coming up is probably one of the biggest fights that you've had in a while. You know, what if you had to make a statement about what the fans can expect out of John Fitch against Rory McDonald, what would that statement be, brother?
Just that this, I don't know, this old lion still's got claws and teeth.
Yeah, right? I wouldn't mess with you. Hell, I'd run. I'd call your name from 3 blocks away. I would. I'd got to be three, four blocks away, but I'd still call your name. But you'd probably still catch me because I only got one damn leg anyway. But, you know, John, it's great to have you on the show. It's great to, you know, let people see who you are outside of the cage. What you've done in the cage is tremendous. I don't think I've had very many guests on my show that have fought the quality of fighters that you fought your whole career. What was it about you in that aspect that made you want to fight the best of the best? I mean, because you look at your career, you didn't fight any slouches at all.
No, I mean, I've always looked to fight the best guys. I mean, that's what you got to do to prove your worth and to show, you know, prove your mettle, I guess. Yeah, I'd rather fight the tough guys than just take easy fights.
And you truly have, and you left a legacy on the sport, and you left a legacy in your life. What does it mean for John Fitch? Because I love your YouTube channel, by the way, you know. I didn't know you were so multifaceted in music and everything else. I don't want to give you a bad time. But, you know, is that your breakaway from the gym and from everything else, the monotony of life, sharing your aspect of who you are through YouTube?
A little bit, yeah, little you bit. Know, and I think that part of it, too, is I see there's a lot of young men with no guidance. And there's a lot of confusion out there. So I just kind of want to put myself in a position to talk to that younger generation and even, you know, some guys my age, whatever, and just let them know that, you know, life is not shitty. You know, it's hard, but there's a lot of good things, and you just have to keep your head in the right place. Because I've been through rough times, and yeah, I just wanted to kind of help other people. There's a lot of depression and suicide going around these days, and I think it's sad, and you know, I think everybody's kind of lost somebody to suicide, you know, and especially in the last like 5-10 years, it seemed like it's getting worse. And nobody's really doing anything about it. So if I can get online and talk to people for a little while most days, and that can help somebody not kill themselves, then I think I can do that.
That's really righteous of you, man, because, yeah, I work a lot behind the scenes in different aspects. Hell, my show is even sponsored by the United Way Merced and the United Way. You know, that's one thing I love about fighters and people like you. You know, it's you don't go on social media and brag about what you do. You don't go out in life and brag about what you do. I think the things like that should be relished in the heart. And that even gives me more respect for you, because that's how I roll. I roll without expectation. I do a lot that nobody will ever know that I do. And I think that's the way life should be. And I think you're right that, you know, I used to preach about the good old days on my show. And then I had a 22-year-old fighter on, and I had to apologize to him. I said, man, I apologize. I'm talking about days that you'll never understand, that you'll never know. And he was like, what do you mean? And I said, man, when I grew up, we didn't have cellular phones. We didn't have computers. We didn't have video games.
I went through college without without using a computer or the internet. Like I never searched or looked anything up online once through college. Like when we had to do a research paper, we had to go to this building, the Stacks building, which was a 3 or 4 stories tall, and it was all research books. And you had to go through and use a Dewey Decimal System and try to find an article about some research that was done. Like, I mean, it was a day-long trip to find something that you type into Google now and you get 50,000 results.
All right. We didn't have Google. It's pretty bad. When I remember when I was a kid, we had the first colored television on the block, and everybody used to come over and watch this little colored 12-inch television that was colored. You know, it's like we were the big one. We were rolling big, man. You know, times have changed, and you know, I look at bullying. I look at all different aspects of life, and honestly, it saddens me. But to hear fighters like you that are doing things behind the scenes, that gives me hope, man. That there is still a chance for the future, and people to understand that there is people like you that do care, and they can reach out to you and talk to you. That's what even makes you more real, John. You know, I didn't expect the interview to get this humble, but I truly appreciate you sharing that aspect of who you are. You know, the sport has a way of showing society that, you know, it looks brutal, it looks this, it looks that, but that's why I love the platform of the show, because it truly gets to show who the people truly are that, you know, everybody's watching on television or following on social media. That aspect doesn't represent who you truly are in life at all. You know, I got a question that I've been dying to ask you, and I'm going to let you go here in a second. If you had to write down on a piece of paper, John, a statement that was going to be put into a time capsule for future generations to open up and look at and read your statement, what would you like that statement of John Fitch to be?
Oh, man. Life is full of suffering, and the only way to minimize suffering is through finding meaning. You need to find meaning in your life and purpose. And if you don't, chasing happiness is just going to leave you sad and lonely and depressed.
Man, that's deep. I like that, brother. I truly do. You know, John, I'm gonna hand the mic over to you. I know in life that there's people that always help us, you know, stand side by side with us, push us when we need that push, and instill intent in us. And I know sometimes in life we don't get that opportunity to thank those people. So I'm going to hand the microphone over to you before we get to your sponsors and let you thank those that you feel that need to be thanked.
Yeah, Oak Grove has been by my side for, man, maybe a decade or longer. Great people, really take care of me. And then, you know, other than that, I have a lot of people who have been there for me and helped me out over the years. I have a book I'm working on. It's probably going to be part of a book series. I share some of my journals with people, and I think, you know, sharing those journals is gonna give a lot of thanks to the people that have helped me become who I am over the years. I think it'd be too long for me to sit and list everybody.
So, yeah, I got you, brother.
Yeah.
You know, well, this, since you put it that way, I mean, you've been in the sport forever. I mean, that was kind of an unfair question of me to ask. But, you know, they know who they are. They know you appreciate them. But I do want to ask you one more question, if you don't mind, because it just came to mind. After it's all said and done, how would John Fitch like to be remembered?
It's one of the greats, I guess. You know, I've put a lot of work. Well, I mean, you know, to be remembered for a long time, and I'm hoping this last little stretch, this last tournament, you know, this is going to give me an opportunity to level myself up into an even more elite class of fighters.
I think it will, my friend. You certainly demonstrated that against Paul Daly at Bellator 199 that you're not going anywhere soon. You keep proving to the world time and time again that John Fitch is a formidable warrior and here to stay in the sport. And I got to admit, man, after seeing you at Bellator 199, you're not going anywhere anytime soon. So I wish you the best of luck, my friend, in the tournament. I think you're going to have a tremendous outing against Rory McDonald. I will back you till the cows come home on that, you know. But thank you for joining the show. You know, I know there was a little bit of a mix-up. I appreciate you coming on and blessing my listeners and myself, you know, because you truly are a true veteran of the sport. You're a humble veteran and a man that truly has a heart, and I appreciate that in life. So thank you so much. I'm going to hand the mic to you if you have any sponsors, friends or family, or just anything you want to add to the program. The floor is yours, John.
Yeah, I just want to send people to johnfitch.net. You know, I got a lot of stuff up there, some blogs you can check out. And then my YouTube channel, Official John Fitch, you can check that out. I do live streams almost every day. And then I'm going to start doing some live streams along with some fights sometimes too, so you can watch the fights with me.
That's dope. I like that. Any more guitar playing coming soon?
I just, you know, my shake breaks, the live streams I do daily, I play a little bit on those.
I love it, bro. Thank you so much, John, for coming on. I'd like to get you on before the fight, if that's possible. You know, I want to share you because you share with the world who you are, and that's tremendous, man. I appreciate your walk in life, and thank you so much for joining the show, brother.
Awesome, man. Thanks a lot for having me.
All right. Thanks, bro. You have a good day. God bless. Ladies and gentlemen, that was John Fitch, and really a humble guy, man. I love the guy, man. You see, that's what's cool about this platform is you really don't get to know about these fighters on other shows. And I'm not trying to toot my own horn because I can give two craps about that. But where else are you going to hear that John Fitch wants to make a difference in the suicide rate in the United States or just anywhere for that matter? You know, like you said, if he can change one life and save one life, then he's doing what he's meant to do. With that being said, I want to thank Finished MMA, Juan Martinez. I want to thank the 86ers.net with Alfred and Freddie. I want to thank Cutman for Hire with Jacob Stitch Duran and Juan Ramirez. And last but not least, my buddy Joe Rice at Bite Me Mouth Guards, the United Way Merced, and the United Way. On that note, I think it's only fitting that I want to take us out with a little bit of Ice Cube today. On that note, have a good day. God bless.
Yeah. Fool. You know how we do it. When I walk the west side, coming from the west side. Nothing but the west side. Ain't nothing going on but the bomb ass rap song. Hitting all night long. Just like me on the black and white ivory. Getting six on a Tita Leaf. You don't want to.